Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Call Point of View now
on 086-00-00-959.
Okay, in studio with us we have Anile Munda, who is an independent. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you, Pamela, and good evening to your listeners. Thank you so much for hosting
me. You are most welcome. What does it take to be an independent amongst giants? Some who've been around for 100 years, it must be quite something to make a decision to go at it alone like this.
It is indeed a mammoth task. It's a tall task, but it is also an expression of a display of commitment to one's country, and also a reminder of the fact that we are also a generation that must carry the spear where it was left by the previous generation. And we are also seized with a continuous reflection that must never leave us, of always wanting to dig deep and ponder on the state of our country, not for ourselves, but as a way of checking if our democracy is able to fulfill what was dreamt of and what was aspired by those who came before us. But over and above that, it is really about, for me as Anele, it is really about paying my own respect to the sacrifice of the fallen heroes who left this giant inheritance for us as a generation. So standing alone meant that one must subject herself to scrutiny. One must be believing that I possess the necessary prowess and the ability and attributes of leadership that have stood the test of time, which I believe that will come in handy to save my country at the critical time like the one we are in.
You've been a member of parliament. You're not new to this, right? And I think it's interesting that many people don't really know how you left and why you left. Lots of speculation. That's not where I'm going. I think it's also a good time for you to tell people what made you walk? Because I think that's an interesting story to tell.
One thing I've come to appreciate about being a woman politician is that once you know who you are, what you stand for, you don't need to really invest time trying to converse and galvanize other people to believe on the principles that you stand for. Because remember, we may be a collective as leadership, but you are your own leader. And that's my philosophy in life. When I left the ANC, and this is the thing that people sometimes never take the time to understand, that in politics, if you are in it simply because someone invited you, you will never have your own unique basis of principles that define your own role as a politician in that political setup, because you will forever have to consult whoever brought you in. The good thing about Anele, I was born in politics. That is why you could never have Anele being a person who has a handler. You cannot align or assign a handler to Anele, because I am my own fully fledged and actualized leader who doesn't need another person to show me the reins. And when we were in the ANC going to Polokwane, which was to mark a point of no return for the ANC, and I'm glad, Pamela, because we have lived to see the things that we spoke about, which we were insulted about at the time, that we were just being tribalists that did not want to see a different person emerging from the ranks of the ANC and take over from President Thabo Mbeki. We wanted a Xhosa Nostra and all those kind of things. But every single thing that we spoke about building up to Polokwane has come to fruition, has come to be experienced by everyone, including those who were proponents and who were leading charlatans at the time, who led the onslaught towards us to say these people are just having a figment. Whatever they're speaking about, it's never going to be there. They are now coming one by one making public apologies of the things we spoke about as far back as 2002. So when we decided to leave the ANC and establish COPE, it was not out of the fact that we were aggrieved of the fact that we did not win a conference, but it was on the basis that the political principles that we were individually and collectively attracted to to the ANC at the time when all of us individually came were no longer there, because the ANC had personalized itself into one demagogue, Jacob Zuma. And we're not to be made to keep quiet about those. Neither were we going to allow that we may be accomplices to the destroying of the principles of the ANC that have not only nurtured and molded us, but that have given us a political heritage and wealth that can never be taken away. I mean, there's nothing that the ANC can do with me now, because I'm the product of the beauty of the politics of the ANC that no longer exists. And they can't take that wealth and heritage away from me, because they built me. They made who I am, right? I was present to the time as well, and I learned, I took my own time to empower myself, and I became a fully actualized leader, because I was obedient to the process of Anele, who was being built at the time. But the fact that the ANC could not then come back and harvest its own investment on me was not for me to then wander about and not do anything, because I was not made a leader for the ANC. I was made a leader by the ANC for the country South Africa.
You say no one recruited you. You were born a leader. You were born into politics. Let's talk about your personal journey into politics.
Wow, it's a journey. It's a loaded journey. But I'm born from a family that is a family of politicians, political activists, academics, scholars, a whole lot. But the person who directly had a political impact in me becoming the person I am is my grandfather, Caledon Sizakele Mda, the late great man that I've ever had a blessing of knowing, and a leader who molded and taught me what leadership is about. One of the things that he used to say, and I was very young at the time, Pamelo, imagine an old man saying to you, I mean, you are 6-7 years, he's going to tell you that, you know, the most important thing about a leader is having your integrity without a price all the time. And I mean, at 6, you don't even know, what are you talking about, dude? I mean, integrity, I'm 6. Like, honestly, how do you think I'm going to even process and comprehend the things that you're talking about? But when he used to bring a newspaper, like he used to cut newspaper articles, only it would be political issues that he would bring home for me. And he would make me read these. Mind, by that time, I mean, rural town of Bizana, I'm very small, I'm very young, I know nothing, but he would make me read. I would read this up until I get to sleep, and I wouldn't know the next day, where was I before I finished? And later on, I realized that he had a very gently, beautifully loving way of circumcising me into politics, and without necessarily bringing the burdensome part of politics as we have come to experience, which I believe it was his way of making me balance between the role that politics play in a person, but also the hardship that comes with the responsibility of guarding this role that you must play. And I think I've come to develop a way of honing myself into that, but using that foundation as my reference and always building from it. And I think the catalyst that has solidified that for me was me having experienced my grandfather as a leader in people. I mean, I used to go with him to meetings. I mean, he was one of the people who worked very closely with the late Oliver Tambo. He used to be the people who would come with those cassettes to play the message of President Oliver Tambo from exile. What is the message from the leadership now? What is the next course of action? What must be known, and all those things. So being that person, he had a very intentional, kind, and almost, you know, gentle form of bringing the aspect of you understanding the space that you are in, and also that creation of the political futuristic lenses of knowing the discourse without necessarily being burdened because you are a child. He had a very beautiful understanding of, this is a child, but there's a responsibility I carry that I mustn't miss, even though Anele is still a child. So that's where it started with me, and that's where I come from with it. And I think that's where I also learned to be an honest leader. And being an honest leader even at the point when it is not fashionable, because that's the only leverage and mileage that my political astuteness as a leader is about.
Mm. Were you tempted to join another party after COPE?
Have never.
Really?
Have never.
With all the resources, the structures in place, well, you know what I mean.
Listen, the carrots have been dangled.
Yes.
Very beautifully fat carrots. Mm. But I think most people were like, but why would you leave COPE and be lost? Or why would you not rejoin the ANC and actively participate and get to, you know, spaces where you are needed and whatnot and whatnot? And for me, the most important thing was people understanding that, first of all, I was not in COPE because we were trying to establish an opposition in COPE. COPE became a failed project because of the very same shenanigans of the ANC, you know, which old people crossed with, you know. And that's the state that this country is ultimately going to descend or disintegrate into. Because the only thing that people out there care about, Pamela, it's where am I and what is the state of bank balance on where am I? And we are not those kind of people, and we should refuse. Because, listen, the state we find ourselves currently, that of depreciating the value of leadership from us as young people into creating us to be monsters and victims of financial, you know, micromanagement, and that's the only thing we get to be defined with, is travesty. Because it takes away what this country ought to have on us as its heritage of the next layer of leadership, right? So if we fall trap into that, because there is so much temptation on the table about, as you're saying, the resources and everything else that you can think about, you know, and you just be like, you know what, let me just go and be a Gucci girl, let me just go and be an LV girl and whatnot. But after the LV and the Gucci girl, who are you valuably? What is the measure of your leadership? What do you stand for? When we take away the Gucci, when we take away the LV, and we say, please bring us Anele, will you be able to have anything to put on the table? That's always my preoccupation. I never want to find myself being a shell, because I'm always having a notion that says, there's a next young person who's trying to read something from me. There's a next young person who's always wanting to say, I saw it from Sis Anele, right? So the failure for us to be able to fully comprehend the discourse and all its unwanted shenanigans and our inability to stand and stand against them, even when they are done by those who were once inspiration to us, it is us failing our own generation.
So back to the question, why did you leave Parliament?
I left Parliament because, remember when we went to Parliament as members of COPE, the MPs, we got 1.4 million votes, which was not just a miracle. Mm. It was an intention that was expressed by the people of South Africa, who said, we saw what you saw in the ANC. We believed what you believed in, and we entrust you with the next agenda item of going to fix South Africa through Parliament. And if you do what we ask you to go there and do, we might come back and just elevate you or double what we've given you. But you know what happened? COPE spent a whole lot of its lifetime tussling on internal intra-politics that were just about positions between two men. Who must lead between me and you? The rest of the people in COPE were subjected into being mob that belongs to either or. And I could not identify with that, because I have never been a person who's forced into factions. I hate factionalism. And I'm a person who always believes that when I stand for something, even if you wake me up at 1 a.m., I must be able to articulate my position. Why do I stand on this side? Mm. So finding myself in a space where two men are fighting to destroy a party because their egos will not let them allow the party to grow, and grow in a natural, organic way by taking the party to a Congress and elect a leadership that will be an expression of the masses, of the members of COPE, So much so that we had to neglect our business in Parliament, because the only preoccupation on the agenda every single day, no matter the platform, the no matter the podium, the issue is about who is the actual COPE leadership. And it was not just tiresome. It was a betrayal of the expression of the confidence of the people of South Africa. And I remember when I first took the decision to take a step back and not be active in anything, I knew by that time that my time here was long overdue. I'm gone. And I remember when I few people that I confided in to say, look, my journey here has ended. Most people have told me that, look, you are young, you've got no business, you've got a bright future in politics, you don't have to be deterred by these things that are happening. It's a phase, it's going to pass. And over and above that, you're going to live here with so much money, the pension that you're going to get here, it's going to be a very nice fat check for you and your children and your family and whatnot. And I think at the core for me was this thing that says, I cannot amass the courage to intentionally betray the South Africans who said, we see you, Anele, and we want you there. I can't stay for the money, because the money is not for them. It's going to be for me. So it was the inability to sit with the conscience of knowing that I will leave Parliament with accumulated wealth. That would not have been due to me, because I would not have done what I ought to have fully satisfied in order for me to deserve that wealth. So I felt that those millions were not to be accorded to me, because I had not earned them. And I felt that it needed to be me who demonstrates the fact that I know that we've failed. And my admission of knowing that we've failed was to leaving the rosy and cushy positions of Parliament.
And what was behind your decision not to express that at the time?
I did. I think it might not have been captured, but I did. I did very well. I remember, I think I had... I had an interview. Who was the SABC correspondent in Parliament at the time? I can't remember. No, I think it was Manelisi
Dubase.
That's right. Yes. I did say that I cannot continue serving COPE, because COPE is not in Parliament. COPE is in courts. And it's denying us the opportunity of representing the voters who brought us here. And to continue sitting in that seat in Parliament saying you represent COPE, it's not just a mistruth and a misrepresentation of facts. It's a simple grid. You're sitting there because you just don't want to get out of the gravy train. And for me, it was important that I don't just get out, but I also leave knowing that if anything, I did the right thing, and history, if I'm not absolved by anyone, I leave it to history to do it.
Anele Mda is my guest. We're unpacking Anele Mda's election manifesto, and she's in studio with us. 086 000 00959. So lots on X. Lots of people are interacting. She is cooking for Gael. Some of them are saying. So yeah, no. So let's continue, and we'll take those calls on 086 000 00959. Let's start actually with a call. Ntate Selby, good evening and welcome. Hello, Ntate Selby.
Good evening. Welcome. Good evening. How are you, Pamelo?
I'm well. How are you, Ntate Selby?
I'm blessed beyond measure. Anele, how are you?
You know what, Anele, can you hear? Okay, you won't be able to hear. I am going to... I'm going to set her up in a short while, Ntate Selby. But she's ready. She's thank now you. Ready to hear you. Ntate Selby, go ahead.
Yeah. Anele.
Ntate Selby.
Yes, I can hear all what you're saying. No, they are beautiful things. But I'm worried about what are you going to do the best in helping the disabled people, mainly the blind one like myself. Because when we complain about the money that they are paying us, that the government is giving us the grant, that is too little. I need someone to wash my clothes. They have to go for training. And they are going to teach me how to wash my clothes. I don't know whether they can teach me how to see a stain on my shirt.
Selby. Anele?
Now, may you please help me there and tell us how best are you going to help us? Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Selby.
I think I love the fact that Dr. Selby speak directly to one of the issues that are very of a highlight in my manifesto.
Yes,
where I indeed zoom into the issue that relates to how firstly Pamela, we seem not to even understand the issues that pertains to people living with disabilities. But you know, the most painful thing about it is our arrogance of thinking that we get it. And we get it so much so that because we think disability is physical, we dismiss every single other aspect of people living with disability, and we want to make them feel as though it's just a figment. They do not. They are not. What they know is their state is not true. And it has come to me in a very vivid way that we have not even begin to reimagine the right vocabulary that we must create and the literature. Listen to us when we speak for them, not speaking on their issues by way of being advised by them, because we don't see them, we don't hear them. They are defaced, and they are defaced by us able-bodied people. So one of the things that I propose in my manifesto is that in prioritizing the issues of our people living with disabilities, we must have a dedicated institution that is specifically, we must not have them as an add-on in the government. We must have a dedicated, specially focused unit under the department, under the presidency, as an executive authority. Because remember, right now as we speak, do we even have a national disability strategy in this country? We do not. And what does that say? It tells you that even the margins that government has set for itself to achieve on the placement of the people living with disabilities in government, it's unachievable, because we don't even have a guiding framework that we want to follow. We don't even have a strategic form of imagining what we want to address on issues that are challenges of people living with disabilities. One of the things I make mention of in my manifesto regarding just access for people living with disability is education. Tell me why in 30 years we do not have in each and every public institution a demarcated side that is specially focused at being accessible to all people living with disabilities who are experiencing disabilities in different forms. Because me and you will think disability is about what? It's about having a hand that does not work. We will not recognize autism. We will not recognize deaf. We will not recognize blindness. We will not recognize a whole lot. And there are even now, as science seems to be suggesting, there's chronic disability as well, which me and you will not have a way of even detecting or even legitimizing. But we always want to put ourselves opinion to be the one that's elevated above the people who are experiencing this thing. And I want to say to Dr. Selby, you are one of the priority groups that I have highlighted in my manifesto, and I believe that the first thing that we need to do is to develop a countrywide national disability strategy that must begin to set us on motion on how we can be able to prioritize and also bring to the center and the mainstream issues of people living with disability, but ensure that their representation is quite there's an aggressive invitation or opening of spaces to ensure that people living with disabilities are given access across the spectrum.
Mm. You deal with corruption, and you have ideas of how you want to deal with corruption within the service sector, the public service sector. You've got lots of ideas on that. Just take us through some of those.
You know, corruption is actually the thief that makes so many young people unemployed today. It is the hand that has stolen from so many aspirant great business initiatives and ideas that have not kicked off from the ground. It is the obstruction that has kept ideas of young people who went to NEF and IDC and CIFA and were demanded 5 million turnover before they can qualify for financial assistance from a government institution. And it is on that basis that I cannot even be equivocal about the fact that we need not to be apologetic on the drastic steps that we need to take as we try and arrest corruption in the public sector. And for me, one critical aspect of doing so is simply abolishing the tender system. Because abolishing the tender system, it simply means you create a unique, open, merit, transparent space of doing business with government for every deserving South African who is a business person, without having to depend on the political connection that has become a mileage for the people who do business. And, you know, on that score, Pamelo, watch how the arrogance of the tenderpreneurs who knows that their attainment of these billions and these multi-millions tenders that they get, it was not due credibility. It was not due merit. Watch how they become a small circle that is aligned to politicians, not bringing in any additional player in the market. But the only thing that they do is to ensure that they keep the hands of politicians shining and ensuring that they continue to make them feel good with all kinds of bribes, because the circle must be kept smaller. The smaller the circle, the higher the gains on the tenderpreneur. The smaller the circle, the higher the bribes on the politicians. Who at the expense of that exercise is suffering? Every single innovative business idea that is supposed to enable our economy to ensure that it produces jobs that employ me and you and our children, but over and above that, an economy that is able to propel a constructively, objectively upward mobility and upward growth of our growth domestic product, right? And at the core of the tender system is politicians of all political parties. All political parties, because that's the tap that they enjoy money from. There's no political party who has spoken out on Edwin Sodi. Why? Because if you like, you would say Edwin Sodi is a funder of the ANC. Why is UDM quiet on him? Why is ATM quiet on him? Why is EFF quiet on him? Because tender premiers, they drop a million here, 2 million there, 5 million there. So it becomes a more of a web of the controller being the one who now benefits, and the one who's the connector being the one who dictates how much more can we add into our circle. And I'm very unapologetic about that. A lot of people have said, misconstrued me saying that we need to abolish tender system as though I'm saying we must remove BE, triple BE. The tender system has got nothing to do with BE. And there's nothing about the tender system that is an advancement of triple BE. There's nothing.
Good quality healthcare, access to that, you address that as well.
You know, the prevalence of COVID-19 laid bare the state of collapse in our public health. It, amongst other things, it shamed those who do not have resources to go and get private health. And no country should have its citizens being exposed in such a vulnerability like the way South Africans, most South Africans, were exposed during COVID. And at the core of that, Pamelo, it's not even sophisticated issues for me. It's just the general universal access of ensuring that you are able to access, you are able to walk into a clinic and be able to get the basic clinical needs that are supposed to be at a clinic level, right? You are able to go to a hospital and you must at least find 50% of the acceptable basic provision that the hospital is supposed to have. In South Africa, we know, me and you know, that even a Panado is a luxury in some instances. And one of the things that I'm talking about in my manifesto relating to health issues is that we can fail on many things, but we can't fail on universal access. And on that score, that is why I'm saying, even if we were to say there are concerns and reservations that we have relating to NHI, we must not frown on NHI on the basis that we believe that it might temper on the privileges that are enjoyed by the ones who have, the ones who are able to get private health services at the expense of the general massive people who are unable to access just a basic health service. And for me, that is sacrosanct. It's not something that we can gamble with. I mean, it's not correct that we, right now, you know very well that we are still dealing with a huge issue in South Africa of the fact that at the core of the basic health of the people of South Africa is big medical aids that are having a feast. We are a literal feeding ground for them to calculate and accumulate high returns each year. But at the expense of what? At the expense of the general public who cannot be able to access such services.
Your immigration policy, quickly.
Our country's sovereignty cannot be relegated to having to be defined by outsiders or being defined by people whom we have got no voice in defining their sovereignty. And in this instance, I'm saying the coming and going in South Africa can never be made to be a lawless occurrence. It has to be orderly. Whether we like each other or we don't, South Africa is not a jamboree. It's a country. It's a respected country of people who, of stature, who did not just wake up and accumulated this, attained this freedom. And it has got its own sacrifices that were made. But in the sacrifices that were made, Pamela, we can't say there are African sisters and brothers countries that gave a hand in ensuring that South Africa attains and now it's payback time. We all know nothing. Our country belongs to South Africans before it can belong to anyone. And whoever crosses to the shores of South Africa must be subjected to full scrutiny of our laws, our immigration. We must ensure that our borders are not a freeway gate zone where every Tom, Dick and Harry languishes and freely lands in South Africa. But one of the things that we need to do in tightening our immigration laws, we need to be unapologetic about how we link our national population register into our immigration strategy. Because if, for instance, a person comes to a country, they get processed through Home Affairs, right? So there is no way we might have our South African identity being stolen if we do that, because everything that is UNLEMDA is linked with the population register. Should there be another 1,000 UNLEMDA, but who does not reflect on the population register, it's easy for us to be able to detect those things. And we must be very aggressive. It's at the lowering of the inability or the lack of willingness to apply tightened immigration systems and laws in our country is at the expense of so many of us as South Africans.
Why should people vote for you?
I'm not a breath of fresh air. One thing for sure, but I'm a sober leader who believes that the people of South Africa have been played for far too long. And I bring no politics. I bring no politics. I've got no gymnastics to play with South Africans. The only thing that I present myself with is genuinity, is honesty and integrity. You know, I'm that person whose integrity is so unshaken that I don't have to shy away from speaking about the fact that I know I'm an honest leader. And the proof of that is me having stood up and said, I will be scrutinized. Am I ready? And I said, yes. And I will be scrutinized in all spectrums. Is that okay? Yes, it is. And South Africans should vote for me to go to the national parliament and bring to parliament a responsible leadership that will demand accountability, but also a person who will come to parliament and force a way of ensuring that our democracy is not just an attainment of a short-term celebration, but is rather a continued evolution of a democratic project whose objective intention must be to realize the full actualization of the attainment of the betterment of the lives of the people of South Africa. And at the center of those lives is Black people's lives, which we must not shy away from speaking about them and speaking boldly about them. us being proponent of black objectivity must not come at the expense of us not being able to speak on the issues of black people unapologetically. And I make that point very profoundly because I know, for me, this freedom and this democracy that we are in would not even have granted me this opportunity of standing and say I will go and represent my people if it was not attained for the black people. The democracy is the only tool that we have in our hands as black people.
Last question, who's funding you?
Anele funds herself.
Anele Mda, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Pamela.
All the best.
Thank you, man.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.